Good morning. It is time to get up with the NFL draft. 3 weeks away. And this morning, McShay has his new preview. Five quarterbacks in the mock. He'll tell you where they're headed. Plus, Adam Schefter with an extraordinary interview that tells all of us exactly what has to happen before we will see football again. Don't miss it. And then, Sean Payton tested positive for COVID-19. He's doing much better. He joins us live to talk about that and his team as we get up with you. Starting right now. It is a Tuesday. We are in Bristol again today. I'm Mike Greenberg, and I thank you for getting up with all of us. We have a terrific show ready to go. We will be here with you every single morning, and as I will say on every one of those mornings, as sports fans, we're going to get through this thing together. And we start with Get Up and Go and a bunch of big news around the world of sports, including the NCAA Division I Council voting yesterday to grant an extra year of eligibility for all student athletes in spring sports that had their seasons canceled due to the pandemic. Winter sports, such as basketball, were not included in that ruling. We'll have Jay Billis later this hour to talk about it. Meanwhile, news from the UFC. It appears that the highly anticipated match between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson is once again off. Khabib confirming on Instagram Live yesterday he's back home in Russia. He's unable to leave to compete, which would be April 18th. Elsewhere, the USTA announced that the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in Flushing Meadows, New York, home of the U.S. Open, will begin to be converted into a medical facility starting today. The plans call for the facility to hold 350 temporary hospital beds. Golf, could a second edition of the match between Phil and Tiger be in the works? Mickelson recently replied to a fan's question on Twitter saying that he was, quote, working on it, and adding that he wasn't teasing. So we can all look forward, we hope, to a rematch between those two. And NFL owners are expected to vote today on a proposal to expand the playoffs from 12 to 14 teams starting next season. If approved, only one team in each conference would get a wild card weekend bye. That's Get Up and Go. Meanwhile, the news this morning just released from Todd McShay, his fourth mock draft. And let's take a look at the quarterbacks. No change at number one. It is still Joe Burrow going to the Cincinnati Bengals. That comes as no surprise and does not figure to change as we work our way towards that. No change either at five, with Tua Tagovailoa going to the Dolphins. He has been medically cleared for all football activity following a hip injury he had in November. A lot to talk about there, and we will. Todd has Jordan Love at six to the Chargers for the second straight mock draft. In his second mock draft before the combine, he didn't even have him going in the first round. So that's a huge jump. And then the fourth quarterback off the board is Justin Herbert at nine to the Jaguars. In the last mock, he had Herbert going 13 to the Colts. Since that time, Indianapolis signed Phillip Rivers. You take a look here. He has Washington and the Lions at 2 and 3 passing on Tua, instead taking Chase Young and Jeff Okuda, respectively. The Jets at 11 make Alabama's Jerry Jeudy the first wide receiver selected. There will be a lot of those. And the Patriots at 23 not taking a quarterback in this mock draft, instead selecting an Iowa pass rusher, A.J. Epenesa. So a lot to get to there. We'll have McShay for you shortly. But this morning we do have back Dan Orlovsky and the big swagoo Marcus Spears. And delighted to have both of you guys there. And I want to start once again with Tua at five, because it feels to me, and again, we'll have McShay here shortly, and we know that he is always hesitant to try and project trades and all the rest of that, but this feels like a conversation we've had a lot lately. Dan, I do not believe that Tua will still be available at five, and I don't think you do either.
No, I don't think there's any chance that he falls to five, Greeny, because the reality is this. Any question that a team like the Dolphins had about Tua Tagovailoa in January, they've been answered. And even if we had a normal offseason and we weren't dealing with the crisis that we are dealing within our country, if you were just going through the process, all the questions that you had about him are answered. Is he recovered? Yes. Is he able to be moved around and working out right now? Yes. Is his long-term prognosis good? Yes. Is his hip fully healed? Yes. So all those questions that you might have had reservations on, Greeny, they've all been answered. And so teams are going to have to stop trying to find reasons why or to protect them from not drafting him or whatnot, because any question that I had about Tua medically has been answered so far.
So, Marcus, if I were a lawyer, I would then throw two quick questions at you. The first of them would be, if you're going to take Tua as high as five or trade up to take him at three, wouldn't you be willing to take him number one? The difference between those aren't really that significant. And the second question I would follow up with would be, if that is the case, then if you believe, and I know you've said it before on this program, Marcus, that you think Tua is better, a better prospect than Burrow, if not for the injuries, then what would stop Cincinnati, if they believe that, or any other team, from taking Tua number one or ahead of Joe Burrow now?
Well, the answer to your first question, G, is that nothing would stop me from going up to get him. Now, one is a little caveat. I can't get away from the fact that we watched Joe Burrow have arguably the greatest season of a college quarterback in the history of NCAA football. That's the number one thing. And I think a lot of people, that's going to be hard in Cincinnati building to get over. And him being from Ohio as well. So two things are in play there. It's kind of a no-brainer when you talk about the synergy. But if you were to remove this hip injury and you were to remove the questions about Tua's health and durability, that's one of the questions that we're missing. We continue to talk about this hip injury. One of the issues is durability as well. That's one of the scouts' hang-up when it comes to Tua. If it had not been for that, Tua would have been, I think, the first pick in the draft based on everything we talked about leading up to not only this draft, but during the season when we had the conversation about tanking for Tua. Everybody thought pre-last season in college football that Tua was a surefire number one pick because Trevor Lawrence couldn't come out of school. We lauded over how he throws the ball, how well he played, playing for Nick Saban, being prolific, breaking all of these records. So nothing would have changed that outside of that hip injury against Mississippi State. I think obviously Joe Burrow would have ascended and we would have had a conversation, but I think the overall body of work would have put Tua at the number one spot if you were taking a QB in this year's draft had it not been for the injury.
Go ahead, Dan.
I think we also have to make sure that we understand, like, very rarely do quarterback injuries in college scare teams away from drafting that player early. Like, we have examples of guys that were hurt in college and still drafted early, whether it was Marcus Mariota or a guy like Deshaun Watson. Like, those guys had injuries in college that could scare teams away, and they were still drafted early. Teams actually went up and got Deshaun Watson, obviously. And I just sit back and think of two things when it comes to that situation in comparison to Deshaun Watson and the Tua situation. I wonder how many teams looked at Watson and were scared off from that ACL injury and maybe were hesitant that because of that injury, they were concerned about drafting him high and then the Texans go up and get him. And you better learn from that mistake from other teams being scared to draft a quarterback when it comes to injury. And the second thing is this. We're all looking at this situation as a negative for Tua. And I've talked with people that work really closely with him right now. And these are not agents. These are not hype people that are trying to build up his potential draft slot. These are people working with him. And they rave about how he has attacked this situation. They rave about how much he has matured throughout this process. And they've mentioned how he's taking this situation that we all look at as a negative and using it as a positive to mature and to develop and grow and ready himself for his NFL career. He's actually looking at it as a kind of a springboard or a stepping stone rather than something that's holding him back. And I think that speaks volumes for kind of what teams are getting when it comes to a leader and a competitor.
All right, that seems like the best he can do under these circumstances, of course. And quickly, let me run through a couple of other names for you here, because you just said it. Hembo sent me the list. Deshaun Watson had a torn ACL. Carson Wentz had a broken wrist. Marcus Mariota had an MCL. Robert Griffin III, RG3, had an ACL. Jake Locker had a variety of injuries. Sam Bradford had a shoulder. All those guys went high in the draft. Let me move on to some other pieces here. We'll get back to this. We'll spend a lot of this morning on Tua and Burrow. Marcus, let me turn to you on a name that I think a lot of football fans, you might consider yourself a pretty significant fan, even of college football, and be saying, who is Jordan Love, and how is he suddenly going sixth in this draft to the Chargers? Marcus, how would you answer that question?
I don't know, but gee, I know people have become enamored, and we see this happen in every draft when you start to get around this time where you see this ascending quarterback come from somewhere and you like, who is this guy? What is he? My problem is Jordan Love's opportunities, and obviously it has something to do with the teams around you. His opportunities when he played against elite level college, it was 0-4, 36 80% QBR. And I know that's like, that's a little bit skewed because you're probably running for your life majority of the time. Receivers aren't uncovering, but those things kind of glare out to me. Now, obviously people talk about his arm angle and his ability, his similarities to Pat Mahomes and all of that. And look, I am for what, if you think a player is supposed to go high and you have him that high, I'm all for it. It's just hard for me sometimes when we get enamored with things that look like other people that we start comparing them to. Don't compare nobody to damn Patrick Mahomes right now, okay? Can we give it a second? We just finished talking about a season where Patrick Mahomes is arguably the best quarterback we've ever seen play football, and now we're talking about Jordan Love has some of those same similarities, so he should go number 6 overall. That's my only issue. Against good competition, he struggled. Now, that doesn't mean this guy can't go to the league and develop and sit out for a year and see the game and play at that level. I would just have my reservations about going up to number 6 to take Jordan Love with all of the plethora of talent that's available to you, and Jameis Winston and Cam Newton are sitting out there in free agency right now.
And?
Yeah, I mean, Marcus brings up a ton of valid points. I think the reality is this, Greeny, when you're looking at the quarterback position when it comes to the draft, it's really about production versus potential. And no, Jordan Love doesn't have the production that you're looking for, certainly into Marcus's point, against the top-tier teams. But the potential that you look at as a player, you go, man, what could this guy be with better people around him and better coaching and a really more diverse system? And you look at some of the plays that he does make, some of the arm angles that he does display, and you go, I could do something with that. There's some stuff there that I cannot coach. And that's the balance that these teams are trying to fight with between production and potential when it comes to Jordan Love. And I'm willing to bet that they're going to bet on the potential of him.
So if we look back on the mock draft, and again, we'll have McShay for you coming up at the top of our second hour today. So a little less than an hour from now. He has 4 quarterbacks going in the first 9 picks. And then I mentioned he has a 5th in the mock draft. Jacob Eason he has going in the 2nd round. And we will get the answers to all of the questions from McShay as he joins us a little later this morning. We're just getting started on what will be a very busy Tuesday morning on Get Up. Coming up, before we see NFL superstars on the field again, certain things have to happen. Adam Schefter can tell us exactly what they are after an interview he did last night. He'll join us to tell you all about it. And then, as Tua continues to work out, why his slow and steady approach could pay big dividends on draft night. All that and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Creamy Snickers. You're not smooth when you're hungry. Back to some football news, and Falcons owner Arthur Blank had some comments on the upcoming season. He told Football Morning in America, if I had to speculate now, and I use the word speculate because that's really all it is, I would say yes, meaning whether there would be a season. He said, I could easily see camps being shorter, players being tested on a daily basis, things of that nature, no fan attendance. We may have fewer preseason games, which probably wouldn't be the end of the world. But I think by September, my hope is, by the time the regular season starts, I will be able to bring people together in some form or fashion in a safe manner and play. I'm going to bring Adam Schefter into the conversation for this, because on his latest podcast, Schefter has a fascinating conversation with the medical director for the NFL Players Association, a gentleman by the name of Tom Mayer, who shared really interesting insight into how the league is coping with the COVID-19 virus. Here's a little bit of that interview.
All by way of saying, that just based on a four-month run and the idea that in all likelihood, May, June would be the earliest that anything could get open, then you're probably looking at training camp as being a likely starting point. Now, if it happens earlier, great. So I think you're correct that training camp is probably the earliest. Does that mean that we've just given up on anything but training camp? No, but that's all about, that's what disaster medicine is scenario planning.
Again, this part of a Shefty podcast that is really worth your time if you're interested in all of the variables that surround the NFL's return. And I have Shefty with me on the phone. I'm told we're having a little technical issue with his shot, but I think it's important to hear, Shefty, what else were the biggest takeaways from this conversation you had?
Well, Greeny, it was very fascinating to listen to Dr. Tom Mayer, the medical director of the NFL Players Association. And basically, he laid out all the uncertainty that exists not just in the world today, but in the sports world as it pertains to football in particular, because that was the line of questioning. And basically, he says it's highly unlikely that we're going to see any offseason programs at all. And the next hope would be to have training camp. And he did talk about the fact that if there is a season, using the word if. Now, I will say he is optimistic that there will be a season, but he also doesn't know that there will be a football season yet. And he says that we will know more in late May, early June. We'll begin to make decisions then, get information then as to how things will operate. He talked about the fact that Green Bay is the only NFL city that does not have an outbreak of cases here. Of course, it's in worse in certain places like New York and California than it is in other NFL cities at this time. But it may be to a point here where maybe you're looking at games playing being played elsewhere. That's a possibility. The fact of the matter is there's so much unknown right now. It's all up in the air. But Dr. Tom Mayer, the NFLPA Board of Medical Directors, the NFL, they're all working here to try to figure this out like everybody else in every sport, to figure out what is and isn't going to be possible. He also brought up the idea of looking at Singapore and some of the other areas like South Korea that have been affected. But as I said to him, it seems like we have more incidents of the pandemic here than they do there. And so there may be bigger challenges for the United States moving ahead.
Shefty, again, well done, and thank you. And we'll come back to you, obviously, daily for updates on this sort of thing. But again, I strongly recommend this podcast for anyone who's interested in all the matters surrounding the return of the NFL. And as far as optimism, I've said this all since this began, and I'm going to continue to say it. I'm going to be optimistic because I don't see any good reason not to be. Let's root for the best, and we'll take it as it comes. In the meantime, we'll bring Marcus and Dan back into the conversation, and let's sink our teeth into the pieces of this that we can, because we're football people and we're a football show. Dan, I'll start with you. If indeed the first time these players are able to come together on a practice field in any significant organized way is training camp, so that's late July. Let's root for the best case scenario. They're going to start the season on time, but they're not able to do any of the usual work they do in the spring. How specifically will that impact the sport, and how might it impact individual players and teams?
Yeah, Greeny, first of all, let's look at the teams that I think will be, you know, we'll use it as a benefit. We'll use it as a separation in comparison to other teams. I look at teams like Seattle and New Orleans and Green Bay and Kansas City. These teams that have really like outspoken alpha male leaders at quarterback. Because what's going to happen is the quarterbacks are going to have to become basically mom and dad. They're going to have to become head coach, strength coach, conditioning coach, individual coach. And really it's going to be like calling your strength coach. Hey, what's the workout for today? I'll make sure that everybody in our team gets it. Use technology, Skype or FaceTime or Zoom. And hey, head coach, what would be our team meeting today? And then make sure that everybody on your team gets it. An individual coach, what's the install today? What would we have put in play-wise? I will run the meeting and you hold everybody accountable. So those teams that are solidified with their leaders, they're going to be in a good place because those alpha males will take control. Teams that are going to struggle are going to be teams like, you know, with new coaches, young quarterbacks that are maybe trying to assert themselves, the Giants, the Jets, the Buffalo Bills. And then I think a team that might be hurt is the Dallas Cowboys. Two reasons. One, Mike McCarthy doesn't get to implement his culture. And then two, their quarterback's not under contract. Dak Prescott is not under contract. And so what is his interaction with the team going to be allowed to? What is his interaction with players? How much access does he have? And I think that's going to be a huge challenge for the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott to jump over.
Marcus, what would be the biggest challenges from your view?
Yeah, G, for me, it's the rapport. Obviously, a lot of people look at the quarterback position as leading the team, but I think of it in a different way from individual positions. I know defensive line, we spend a lot of time together in the offseason, building camaraderie, getting to know each other, watching film at each other's homes, going out to dinners. I think building that outside part of actually playing football matters a lot when you're trying to go and chase after a championship. Dan makes great points about the football part of it, the meetings and making sure you have that face time. I'm more focused on how you build in the weight room when it gets hard, when those gassers and when those conditioning drills get tough. Guys start to ascend and become leaders, and that's who you find out during the season you can depend on. Those are the parts that I think will be a big miss as teams go forward.
It does generally feel like it just makes sense that teams that have a lot of veterans that have been together a long time, maybe that have coaches that have been there a long time, would have an advantage if that's the way this plays out. We'll talk more about it as we go. And I'll remind you, for the 41st straight year, the NFL Draft is on ESPN. It's also on the NFL Network, and the College Game Day crew will be on ABC again this year, covering it from the college perspective. It all comes to you Thursday, April 23rd through the 25th, with all 3 days on ESPN Deportes, ESPN Radio, and on the ESPN app. Coming up, Tua's recovery from a hip injury has taken many steps. We'll tell you why something he just started doing will get teams' attention immediately. That is next on Get Up after this sneaky Hembo moment. And Orlovsky, this one's for you. Who is the all-time leading NFL passer among left-handed quarterbacks by yardage? Oh, I love the question. The answer is next. Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up. Give me Orlovsky for a little sneaky Hembo time here. Tua Tagovailoa, pardon me, is going to be a very high pick in this draft. He is left-handed. Orlovsky, who's the all-time leading NFL passer amongst left-handed quarterbacks?
Greeny, yesterday Graziano put me on a group text with Hembo complaining that it was a wrong question yesterday and he messed him up. Hembo wants me to say Steve Young, but I'm not going to. I'm going to pick my golfing buddy, Boomer Esiason.
Oh, he got it right. It is Boomer Esiason, who passed for nearly 38,000 yards in his career. I'll admit, I had it wrong. Hembo, someone tell me, how close was Stabler? I would have guessed Ken Stabler, who was one of the great quarterbacks of all time and doesn't get talked about nearly enough. Either way, Boomer Esiason is correct. Hembo loses today. Meanwhile, let's talk more about Tua Tagovailoa, because as we opened the show with this morning, Todd McShay with his fourth mock draft last night still has Tua going to the Dolphins at number 5. The overwhelming sentiment of our group here is that he will not be available at 5. For the Dolphins to take, they or someone will take him sooner than that. And no one knows the situation with Tua better than our Laura Rutledge, who is back with us here. And Laura is safe and sound, but very plugged in. And I know you've been talking to a lot of people over the last week or so about Tua's situation. We saw that video last week. What are you hearing about his progress since then?
Well, Greeny, this whole time, they wanted to take a very conservative approach with Tua. And that's important when it comes to the healing of the hip and just the long-term prognosis for his long-term health, which obviously the durability, everything that's in question here, people want to see that happen. So just a few days ago, he began some of the drills that they want to see from the further teams that wanted to look at this. Now, this is what you would call routes on air, which is what they started doing. Not this drill that you're seeing on the screen, because that's what he tweeted out. But they started to do routes on air. So we're talking about timing routes. We're talking about deep routes, throwing to actual receivers. I am told by somebody who was there in the building when this happened, that when he began to do this, They threw about 20 passes, and he completed 17 of them. The three misses were by inches. Now, remember, Tua Tagovailoa is the most accurate downfield passer since ESPN began tracking that in 2011. So right off the bat, with him getting back into this more serious activity from an athletic standpoint, he's already off to a great start. That was very encouraging. That video that happened from these routes on air was sent out to NFL teams, offering a lot of reassurance there. And Greeny, the belief continues to be that whenever the NFL season begins next season, he would be able to play. Tua Tagovailoa would be ready by that point if a team is asking him to play that early.
And I quoted you yesterday, but I did it off the top. I want to make sure I have this right, because I know you've been talking both with his team and with others about what his expectation is and the teams that seem to be interested. I was saying yesterday, I believe you said that the Dolphins continue to be a team you are hearing is expressing significant interest. What do we know about his expectation for where he's going to go on the 23rd?
Yeah, I heard you say that. Big fan of the show, and you are absolutely correct. Tua Tagovailoa continues to get a lot of interest from the Dolphins. That's at least one team we know that's continually asked, but so many of these teams are doing their due diligence on this and continue to connect with Tua's doctors, the doctors that have been close through all of this. And of course, they'll be one of those first teams that come April 10th, when they do the final MRI before the draft, which is to check for cartilage buildup and just check the hip and make sure it looks good. You know, after a full month of athletic activity, they're going to be sending out that MRI to teams like the Dolphins, of course, who have expressed interest, and other teams as well. They continue to get more and more calls. And Greeny, it was interesting because last week, just the video that Tua tweeted out, it was just, you know, a little drill. There's so much more that he's been doing. But that little video even got more teams calling, more teams interested in exactly what he's doing. And that's where, you know, I think we'll continue to see that develop. We'll continue to see that interest go around. And it's like you guys have been saying, he really may not be there by that fifth pick for the Dolphins. They really may need to go up a little further to get him. I would still say the flex point is right there at that three pick, because I think Burrow and Chase Young will be one and two. And then that three pick is where it gets really, really interesting.
And then quickly, because I know you've been talking to a lot of the other potential draftees, and this is like, we've never been through a draft process like this one. And there are some who I have to believe will be hurt by this process and the way it's working out. What do you know about that?
Well, look, this will happen throughout this draft. It's just a product of what we're dealing with as a country right now. But I do think that Jordan Love could be somebody who is hurt by what's going on with the limitations with NFL teams not being able to bring guys in. He's somebody that, as you guys have talked about, he's so interesting. He has the Patrick Mahomes comparisons. And look, that's going to take time to develop. But for him, you know, teams might want to really fall in love with him. They might want to bring him in a little bit more. He has had limited contact with teams before all of this happened and before the restrictions were put in place, but I could see him maybe suffering a little bit. Still expect him to go in the first round. Somebody who I think has been helped by all of this is Justin Herbert, somebody who everyone looks at him and says, look, he doesn't have any questions from the measurables. He's somebody that, yes, you may have questions in other realms, but when you look at him, he is everything you want to see from the prototypical size standpoint. And I think that's important. Another thing about Herbert is he was able to throw at the combine. He was the MVP of the Senior Bowl, and he was able to have his pro day. So just the timing worked out a little bit better for him. That could work in his favor.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, Dan, because it feels to me like maybe this goes back now to old school. Like this Jordan Love at Utah State, rather than bringing him into your building and letting him do a bunch of things that don't really have anything to do with football anyway and falling in love with him, teams will actually look at the film, see what he did, and make a decision based on that. Do you think that hurts him?
No, Greeny, because I think that teams are going to look at his tape, and I said this yesterday, what you thought of Jordan Love in December is what they're probably going to think of Jordan Love now. And the teams that really liked his tape going into the season and then watched his tape and understood the situation and said, you know what, we think Jordan Love is a franchise quarterback. We think Jordan Love is a quarterback that is a bona fide starter in the NFL. If they thought that in December, they're not going to have any experience with him to nitpick and go, oh, you know what? We asked him this question and we didn't like it answered. Maybe he's not the guy we thought it was. We thought he was. And so I think that general managers that are good at their job are going to watch tape on Jordan Love and look at what he potentially could be with all those things that we've talked about, people and coaching, instead of trying to nitpick all the flaws of his game. So Laura's got a point. There's probably going to be less teams that fall in love with him because of being able to look at him and go, wow, that was a sick throw at a pro day. But the teams that are watching the tape and looking at him, who liked him in December, are still going to like him now.
Swaggoo, how about Herbert? Well, you heard Laura make the point. He did everything that he could possibly do. The timing might have actually fallen in his favor. How does all this affect him, you think?
Laura is absolutely right about Justin Herbert, because I relate Justin Herbert a lot to Josh Allen. The size, the ability to move, played in Mario Cristobal's offense in Oregon, which really was a runny-centric, and they wanted to have a lot of play action. Justin Herbert was talked about being the first overall draft pick a year ago. So I think a lot of teams will be enamored with that. They'll be enamored with, like Laura said, his size, his ability. And he's been able to go through the evaluation process, which I still think is very, very important with what we have going on right now with this pandemic.
All right, Laura, stay safe, and we will check in with you tomorrow. Obviously working towards this, and you are all over it with all of these potential draft picks. And we are busy all day long on ESPN. Coming up next, after we wrap up at 10 Eastern this morning, it's time for First Take. That'll be followed by a two-hour SportsCenter, then NFL Live. At 3 o'clock, Todd McShay revealing his mock draft, SportsCenter at 5 and 10, and then cap the day with Scott Van Pelt and SportsCenter 11 o'clock Eastern, where we'll reveal the winner in our college basketball greatest player bracket decided by you, the fans, who voted at SportsCenter on Instagram and Twitter. So a very busy day. We're here with you through all of this with the sports on ESPN. As we continue, there were great players at the top of the NFL draft, but there's only one who McShay says is the definitive best, and you'll find out who that is. Next.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
There may be no games,
no practices,
no high fives,
but we're all still part of the team,
and we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance,
but still checking on each other,
helping the most vulnerable,
and supporting our heroes
that are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused,
but the best parts
are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team
right now.
We are back on Get Up, and Todd McShay released his NFL draft tier rankings, which are separate from his mock draft. They're the highest graded prospects, and there's only one player who was in tier one, grading out with a grade of 95, and that is Ohio State's pass rusher extraordinaire, Chase Young. And Laura is back with us here. And Laura, we talked so much about Chase Young all year long, and I guess the question really comes down to, if Tua Tagovailoa is believed by people to be healthy enough to play and to have a prognosis long-term that is favorable, is Chase Young the kind of good that makes you pass up on a quarterback at the number two spot?
It's a hard question to answer, and it is something that, you know, I think the Redskins will grapple with and other teams as well, but specifically the Redskins in this case. I would still say, Greeny, that Chase Young is the best player right now in this draft, and it's the reason why elite grade is the only player with the in this class. The thing about Chase Young, and we've seen this with guys like Bosa, you know, they can make instant impacts right now. And there's just a lot of players in this draft. Tua is certainly in this category where they have a very high ceiling. But right this second, you got to go with Chase Young. And here's the thing about him. You know, when you talk about comparisons, he's an elite athlete, a freaky athlete. I mean, you just haven't seen athletic skill like what Chase Young brings to the table. He's not quite as twitchy as a Von Miller type, but what he brings to the table is a little more power plus quickness. So you're going to see that initial power and then the quickness that he brings after that, which is just a dynamic combination, a skill set that is so rare. You almost can't say you want to pass on that. And it's almost like what our friend Dan Orlovsky has even said about Tua. It's a risk to take him. It's a risk to pass him up. What I would say about Chase Young is it's not a risk to take him. That's a 100% success rate there. It's a risk to pass on him. And I do think that's what the Redskins will say with that number two pick. They can't risk missing out on Chase Young, an instant impactor for their defense.
Well, do I have Marcus? Is Marcus also with us here? I'd like to get his perspective on this, Swagoo, because it seems there are really three options. If you're Washington, you can take the quarterback if you want. I don't think anyone expects that. You can take Chase Young, and that's the easiest one. Or you can trade out. And so my question to you is, if someone is willing to give you a significant package because they want to go up and get Tua, and you're going to get a bunch of stuff. I don't want to start guessing exactly what it would be, but we've seen what these quarterbacks have gone for in drafts in recent years. But it's going to mean you lose out on Chase Young. What do you do?
Gee, it would depend on who's trading up and where they are with that first pick. I wanted to ask Todd because I have another guy in this draft that I think is elite that I saw with my own eyes, and Dan was there and Laura as well. I think Isaiah Simmons is going to be special on the next level as well from Clemson. So if you were able to trade out of that pick and possibly still get Isaiah Simmons now, I know the Giants are hiding heavy on him and he'll be a great fit for them. But the way he plays at all three tiers, to me, is what this league is starting to trend to. We saw Shaq Barrett, who's not huge, go crazy for sacks. We've seen guys move around, plug and play. Isaiah Simmons, to me, is special. But Chase Young is different because he rushes the passer. There are three premium positions in the NFL that you don't pass on when you have a surefire. That's the pass rusher, the passer, and the left tackle that can protect the passer. And Chase Young obviously falls in one of those categories. Now, if you're talking about going up and get Tua, and then you're determining, okay, we got a prospect that's a surefire guy that's going to be able to sack the quarterback for years to come, or we potentially had a quarterback that's going to be able to evade the rush and bring us to a Super Bowl. How do you weigh that decision? Then the medical comes into play. Sitting there with Jack Del Rio, going to 4-3 in Washington, you do not trade out of the second pick to get Chase Young.
All right, let me put the quarterback grades up as well, because I think this was interesting. When I say Chase Young is the only one who has an elite tier grade, it tells you that Joe Burrow does not, although he's so close. He's one spot down. 95 makes you an elite player, and he's a 94. Since 2015, Jameis Winston was the only quarterback to get a rating from Scoundsick of 95 or higher. You see, Burrow and Tua would be right up near the top of these players graded of all time. And so, Dan, I'll come to you on that because I know how high you are on Burrow, and everyone is, but you seem to be particularly so. In your view, is Burrow as good a the kind of prospect that is as good as the other top guys we've seen come out on the draft the last 5 or 6 years?
Oh, absolutely, Greeny. And I've said this is why. He does everything that is super important at the quarterback position so, so well. You talk about a guy that sees the field completely perfect. You talk about a guy who plays with zero panic. He can create on his own. He saves his team's yardage. I mean, there's so many plays. I think back to the Auburn game. He has a three-play stretch in the Auburn game in the second quarter where he saves his offense 52 yards just by his instincts and reactions. It's a very Russell Wilson type of trait. And so I'm looking at Joe Burrow and saying the only thing that you could potentially use against him as a knock would be he doesn't have an absolute elite arm. Still really good. Still plenty strong enough, but he doesn't have an elite arm. So he is as good a quarterback prospect as we have seen come out in a long time.
All right, so I know you have a bone to pick with McShay about the overall rating, and you'll get a chance to pick it coming up in just about 15 minutes. We will have McShay live. All of you stay with me. We'll do much more on the football as we continue here. But there was another big story yesterday, and that is the NCAA Division I Council voting to grant an extra year of eligibility for all student-athletes in spring sports that had their seasons canceled due to the pandemic. Schools will be allowed to expand rosters past their current scholarship limits to accommodate the extra athletes. Winter sports, such as basketball, were not included in this ruling. This was something we talked a great deal about right at the time that all sports were being suspended. And here's Jay Billis to give us some insight into all of this. Jay, what did you think of this decision yesterday?
Overall, I thought it was a terrific thing for the NCAA to do this, to allow spring sport athletes another year of eligibility. Does it create some issues, a little bit of a bottleneck? Of course it does. And they're going to have to ease roster sizes and also allow schools to give additional scholarships, but it's sort of like an airline canceling a flight. They don't just automatically put all the passengers on the next flight because it disrupts other passengers. So there's going to be some fallout from this. I think it would be best if the NCAA would allow like incoming freshmen that are impacted materially by this to be able to just transfer and go somewhere else. There are all sorts of things they can do here. But one thing that they shouldn't do is whine about money and the cost of scholarships, because this is not that big of a cost. Most of the spring sport athletes pay their own way. For example, baseball has 11.7 scholarships for a 40-man roster. Most of those players are paying their own way. And, you know, scholarships are not breaking the bank here. And the NCAA is not talking about sort of the expenses of the high salaries they're paying and the gigantic athletic departments they have and the facilities they have. They shouldn't whine about the cost of a few scholarships.
So then you bring me to something I was going to bring up later, but I'll get to it here because Bobby Carpenter sort of alluded to this on Friday. We are all hopeful that the football season will be able to begin roughly when it is expected to and will be not impacted. That's the optimistic view, and there's no reason not to have it now. But in the event that football is significantly impacted by this, what impact would that have on the rest of the athletic programs that these schools have and maybe on the universities as a whole based upon the amount of money that is involved in football?
Well, it would be profound, not just because of the amount of money in football, but just because their entire business model is built off the revenue generation of athletics, basketball and football. And there are so many expenditures they have. So there are bills to pay. But you could sit and say, well, athletic departments could save a whole bunch of money if they just stopped giving scholarships. Well, they could. They could save millions of dollars. The problem is those scholarships are being paid to the university. So the university is getting that money, and that's going to their bottom line and their budget. So there's an argument to be made that the money coming to the athletic department goes straight to the university, and the university needs that money also. So there's a lot of moving parts here, but it's just, Greeny, it's just like any business. You budget based upon expected revenues, and when those revenues are not there, then you're going to have to find places to cut and save money.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, we mentioned that the spring sport athletes were granted an extra year of eligibility. They didn't do that for the winter sport athletes, many of whom got to play their seasons in their entirety. We think, of course, because it's the most prominent of the men and the women who played their season but didn't get to play in the NCAA tournament. They did not grant them an extra year. What did you think of that decision?
Well, it's certainly reasonable not to grant that simply because most of those sports had come to conclusion or near conclusion. So you'd be opening up something totally different for, say, Cassius Winston to come back to Michigan State. It would have been a nice gesture to allow that because they didn't get to finish their season, but the overwhelming majority of winter sport athletes had already finished their years. And that is a huge cost for athletic departments because those are scholarship sports. Most of those sports, they're all scholarships. Men's and women's basketball, those are a lot of scholarships that they would have to pay for out of the athletic department budget. But again, one thing we're not hearing is about the cost of salaries of these gigantic athletic departments. We're bickering over the cost of scholarships and oh, whoa, if an athlete decides to come back, how expensive that's going to be. They're not talking about how much money they're paying to each other. And that's really the issue here. That's the main cost of college athletics, of the gigantic athletic departments and the gigantic salaries and facilities and debt service that they have as a result of all the spending that they've done.
Well, we'll see if that starts to become a topic of conversation going forward. Jay Billis, thank you. Good to see you as well. The beard looks terrific, and we will check in again soon. Meanwhile, tonight, SVP will reveal the winner of our college basketball greatest player bracket in his SportsCenter at 11 Eastern, where you, the fans, have voted and determined the winners of every matchup by going to SportsCenter on Instagram and Twitter. Our version of March Madness, the conclusion tonight on SportsCenter. Meanwhile, we are just getting rolling here on Get Up. They're the top two quarterbacks in this draft. We're pretty certain where Joe Burrow is going. How about Tua? Todd McShay will answer off his new mock next. Get Up on ESPN.